You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
Hey, hey, welcome to HR Bandit. This is your host, Ankita. If you're returning after our first episode, welcome back. I hope you've subscribed, followed, shared with your friends, done everything that one does with podcasts. If this is your first time here, welcome, and I hope you enjoy the ride. For our stories today, first up, Basecamp's changing and Jason Fried's memo on the same may be the best thing I've read this year. For our second story, Microsoft released its annual Work Trend Index report. 7 trends listed, not all surprising, but there's amazing data in there. But fellow bandits, the best part of the show today is our guest, Raj Raghavan. If you work for HR in India or even globally, you definitely have heard this name. Current CHRO of Indigo, Raj has worked with some of the most fascinating brands, Amazon, GE, Hindustan Lever, Ford. The list is long. He's also closely associated with NHRDN. As always, a big shout out to NHRDN Hyderabad for sponsoring this pod and making this episode possible. With that, Raj, a big welcome to the pod.
Thank you, Ankita. It's great to be on your podcast. And more importantly, it's great to reconnect with you. And for those that are listening to the podcast, Ankita and I used to be colleagues many years ago at Amazon. And it's so nice to see her grow and be on her podcast this time.
I know it's been a dream come true, but Raj, I really miss meeting you at conferences. The many selfies, the Twitter posts, like those used to be the highlight.
And I used to enjoy reading your blogs.
Now, oh, they're still very much there.
Yeah, I don't want to make this sound like a mutual admiration society, but it's good to meet you.
Most definitely. I'm very happy to have you here today. And before we jump into our topics, I wanted to actually start with a fun fact. So the number of podcast debuts in 2020 were nearly triple the new show debuts in 2019. The podcast search engine Listen Notes says 897379. That's a big number, so I'll repeat it again. 897379 new podcasts debuted last year. A whooping 186% increase. With that, Raj, what are your top three podcasts? What are you listening to?
Well, I'm going to say after this podcast, I'm probably listening to yours as well. But as of now, my top three, Ankita, would be Thich Nhat Hanh. This is the Plum Village podcast. And as I think of Thich Nhat Hanh, I'm telling myself I should slow down the way I speak because he speaks really slow. But he's, of course, as impactful as Thich Nhat Hanh can only be. The second one to me is a tie between Adam Grant and Simon Sinek. I was fortunate to be in Adam's class, and I don't know if you know, Adam also teaches at the Wharton School, and I was attending a program at Wharton, and he was doing an open lecture. And I should say this to you, Ankita, he's almost like the Rajnikanth of teaching. And there is so many people that want to be on his, you know, in his lectures. And I was fortunate to listen to him. And of course, I listened to a lot of his podcasts. Simon Sinek, again, is very, very impactful. The one that I, you know, passionately listen to is a Sri Lankan Tamil guy. It's actually a Tamil podcast, if that makes sense.
It's super fascinating. Thanks, Raj, for your top three. I actually heard Adam Grant's TED Talk. Super fascinating. I will definitely check out the rest, though not the Tamil one. Like, that's a language I'm yet to learn. I don't know how I survived 5+ years in Chennai without ever learning Tamil. My top three, well, of course, this one. Like, it would be blasphemy if I ever mention anything else other than this. A top one, Headspace. They're definitely the one who introduced me to podcasts. If you know me, you know that I go on endlessly about Headspace. At some point, I wish they start sponsoring me. And the last one is Snacks Daily. I recently discovered it. It has a huge influence of how I'm now designing my episodes. So big shout out to Jack and Nick, who are the hosts of Snacks Daily. And with that, per usual, we'll all put the links in the show notes. So feel free to click through, listen to all the podcasts that we have referred to and all the studies that we will refer to today. Let's jump into our first story of the day. Basecamp. So Jason Fried on 26th April announced 6 big changes at Basecamp. Now, for those who are not familiar with Basecamp, it's an American web software company based in Chicago. It was founded in 99, and one of the founders is Jason Fried, who is a revolutionary. Like, the number of ideas that he's come up with has always fascinated me, and his memo is amazing. Raj, I have to ask, which of the 6 changes that he announced piqued your interest more than the rest, and why?
You know, I should admit that it was very interesting to read his memo. And Basecamp is a very interesting company. And I've always been very keenly following Basecamp. And of course, Jason Fried is one of those really interesting entrepreneur CEOs. And if I were to just take advantage of a friendship and say I have 2 things that I liked than just one, I would go with his first number one, where he says no more societal and political discussions on our company Basecamp account. I really liked it. And of course, there are people that will have a different view on this, Ankita. I liked it for the simple reason that if I'm going to be working for a commercial organization, I can certainly have my political ideologies, and I can certainly be interested in my own views on politics, but that should not be at the expense of my company. And if I'm representing my company, and I may as well limit it to what I signed up with the company to do. So to that extent, I completely agree with Jason. Of course, this is not to say that you should not have a societal or a political positioning at all. I'm just saying, don't have it on your company's account. The second one, and I'm cheating here now, is actually the number 4 that Jason talks about. No more lingering or dwelling on past decisions. And I think that's a very important one. You know, oftentimes we get cowed down by what we decided before and how that's going to impact how we are going to decide the future. Oftentimes we even get into guilt trips. And I'm basically saying, well, I mean, what's been done is already been dusted. Learn from it, but don't just keep lingering on it or dwell on it forever.
I'm very fascinated that you picked those two, especially like number one has been a cause of debate in most platforms. I know Basecamp faced some amount of backlash on their whole no societal and political discussions, so much so that David had to put out another memo talking about why they came to this decision. Mm-hmm. And at first, I was one of those people. I was like, how can they do this? Aren't these discussions healthy? They should actually encourage people to come as themselves and so on. Mm-hmm. And then I started reading this book called Good Economics for Hard Times. I love the book. I would highly recommend it. But in the opening, it talks about how as a society, we've reached a place where this kind of a bridge between our thoughts, it's becoming more difficult to accept people with completely opposing views. And to walk into a place at work where you can walk in knowing that you won't be judged for your political affiliation or what you believe about climate change, mm-hmm. is probably refreshing. So that part I agree with. Mm-hmm. The part that I'm kind of at the fence on is on the societal things. I think companies today are as powerful as governments, and they have some kind of responsibility on taking a stance on wide impact areas. So Basecamp has said they will take a stance on things that are connected to their business, like privacy claims and so on. But I have now a feeling that they'll probably not have a say on climate change, Black Lives Matters, and other related aspects, which, like, I'm kind of thinking, like, with someone, do organizations with power stop taking stances, or is it a dangerous thing for them to do so?
No, I agree with you. I think global issues like climate change or Black Lives Matter is actually more importantly, or important discussions to have. The only view I have about these is the discussion should be hovering around how Basecamp can be better at these things rather than have a political view on a societal issue. Otherwise, I completely agree with you.
Yeah. So anyway, I think it'll be Basecamp is definitely something I'll follow closely to see how it's doing. But there's another reason I'll follow them closely, and that's because my favorite piece of there, apart from the ones that you've mentioned, is the one on 360 degree reviews. I thought that was like, that is something I've not heard any HR person say yet. So Basecamp is eliminating 360 reviews, saying, and I'm going to quote directly from the memo, "Peer feedback is often positive and reassuring, which is fun to read, but not very useful. Mm-hmm. Assigning peer reviews started to feel like assigning busy work," end quote. Now, I have a theory that every HR professional secretly agrees with Jason, but wouldn't be caught dead saying it. I keep swaying, Raj, every time we've spoken, I went and said 360 degrees are pointless. Then I said 360 degree may have some merit. And I'm like, I think it has merit, but it's so hard to get it right. Raj, what do you think?
You know, it's good to have a point of view, Ankita, and it's always good to have differing opinions as well. And I have used my pre-employment quite extensively. I would say that I kind of agree with Jason, not for the point that he brings in about it being reassuring and positive, but about being somewhat negative in its own ideology. Let me put it this way. You and I work, for example, for the same company. Our intent should be to make sure that we work for the betterment of the company, to some extent, kind of, you know, make sure competition does not take over from you. But what 360 does is make me compete with you and you compete with Anil. And that's basically not helpful at all. And oftentimes, I've also seen peer feedback to be pretty scathing. And that can actually bring down some of the open, honest conversations people tend to have. And, you know, I certainly like my employee performance reviews, the days when it was probably more straightforward. I still remember sitting with my manager and basically getting direct feedback. And of course, my manager would say, well, these are areas, I think, Raj, or your areas of improvement. And this is what I've heard from others. And I think that's very important. But to be basing my performance review or my ability to grow in the company completely on a 360 degree assessment isn't great. In this context, I should somewhat agree that Jason is probably right when it comes to other kind of evaluations. So, for example, I've heard in board evaluations, 360 mm-hmm. degree feedback is just not useful because board members don't work with each other as colleagues day on and day on. So to that extent, they try to be nice with each other, and the evaluators often come back and say, well, I didn't really get anything out of this. So, you know, in a way, I think we should be done with 360 degrees and, of course, use it as, you know, more taking feedback if I'm interested in it. But I think it just brings in unnecessary pressure on a workforce, which is already working pretty hard.
I actually, as you were speaking, I was thinking, like, how much research actually exists on the cost-benefit analysis of 360 degree? Because if the benefits aren't as high as the cost, then why do we still do it? Do we do it for every scenario, or do we do it in specific developmental scenarios? Like, board meetings, this is the first time I've heard of 360. Obviously, I have very little exposure to board meetings, so this is useful tidbit. But yeah, I hope this memo actually pushes people to think about what's there in their company and if there's an actual reason behind it.
Yeah, at the end of the day, my sense is that, you know, why do you want to compete with each other when who you want to compete with is competition?
Oh, absolutely.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. In partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline eSystems Limited.
With that, I'm going to move into the Work Trend Index, our second story of the day. So, Microsoft released its annual Work Trend Index for 2021. Surprise, surprise, it's all related to the hybrid work. It lists 7 trends. I'm going to say them all here very quickly. Flexible work is here to stay. Leaders are out of touch with employees. High productivity is masking an exhausted workforce. Gen Z needs attention. Our innovation has dropped because of connections, the importance of authenticity, and that talent is everywhere in a hybrid world. Mm-hmm. That was quite a mouthful. Per usual, Raj, we'll start with you. What is the one that you'd like to focus on? And then we'll bring up mine.
Yeah, you always give me only one option. You know, a lot of these look like, you know, there are several options. But this time I'll just stick to one. And I think the one that I would stick to is leaders are out of touch with employees. And I read through the report as well. And Ankita, the report seems to suggest that remote working is probably the cause. It basically says, you know, the impromptu encounters at the office have always helped leaders be honest. And with remote work, there were fewer chances to ask employees, how are you? But I think it's beyond that. I think it's the overall concept of what do I want to know about my employee? And if you go back and you talked about research in the previous question, Ankita, and one of the things that I'm very keen on researching for my Indian School of Business executive doctoral program that I'm doing is what connection does employee engagement have with customer service that the employee wants to provide. And in my mind, Ankita, that employee engagement has to do with how I feel my workplace is. What kind of workplace experience I have leads to how engaged I am, and that leads to how much customer service I really want to provide. And a lot of my workplace experience, while it comes due to other factors like a clean desk and a good cafeteria, etc., a lot of it has to do with my leader and my manager. And if my manager is out of touch with me, my workplace experience is going to be awful. And if I'm meeting 100 customers a day, obviously I'm not going to be all that interested in providing my best service to a customer. So that's something I really liked.
Absolutely. And this actually competed with my top one. And it's mostly because of, and I have a very selfish reason behind it. So Bandis, when you go through the report, you'll see this lovely chart. And it says, if you were to look at thriving versus surviving, 61% of business leaders say they are thriving. And when you go down the graph, you're people who are either new employees, less than 1 year, or single, have the lowest chance of thriving. So only 33% single people said that they are thriving, and 36% of new employees said they're thriving. Mm-hmm. And I'm kind of thinking, like, are business leaders designing the future of work based on their perception of whether they're thriving or surviving? Mm-hmm. So I think it is super interesting to see how this flips, or if it flips at all. With that, I'm going to move to my top one, and this is to do with innovation. It says shrinking networks are endangering innovation. And I think I'm not the only one who's terrified about this, because a lot of organizations are saying people should come back to an office. And I'm going to quote directly from the report. Collaboration trends in Microsoft Teams and Outlook show that interactions with our immediate team or close networks strengthened with the move to remote work. Mm-hmm. However, our interactions outside of that team or distant networks have diminished. Mm-hmm. And there's a quote by a senior principal researcher at Microsoft who says, when you lose connections, you stop innovating. It's harder for ideas to get in, and groupthink becomes a serious possibility. Mm-hmm. I found it something as I can definitely associate it with, because all my ideas, or whatever few I've had, have been because of chance encounters. And the whole concept of open offices, larger collision workspaces, were to drive innovation. And suddenly we've all got remote. So Raj, is there a way that employees can be completely remote? That is, have people from all over the world, maybe meet once a quarter, and yet continue to stay innovative?
You know, in the industry that I'm in, aviation, 90% of my workforce cannot work from remotely. You know, think of a time when you sit in an airplane and you hear the public announcement from the pilot that says, I'm working from home today and I'll be operating your plane remotely. You're not going to like that. And I think there is a lot of bias in my industry to be working face-to-face. But what we have also realized, Ankita, in the last year and 2 months or so, that collaborative work happens in spite of not being seen every day at work. So collaborative tools like Teams or Zoom are really helping. And in fact, in the aviation industry, it was almost like a rule. I mean, all my monthly meetings, weekly meetings, daily meetings, they're all face-to-face. We never used collaborative tools. And, you know, when we first started saying, let's use Microsoft Teams, people said, oh, okay, is that a team in Microsoft, right? From there on, we've come a long way. We're doing a lot of work. My board meetings are happening virtually these days. We are doing, big ticket deals virtually. And that's not stopping us at all. Whether it will stop innovation, I don't think so. Because, you know, we just got off a 6-month course with Indian School of Business for our top 70 managers. And they worked on the top 14 big problems to solve for Indigo for the future. This is the next 3 to 5 year kind of horizon. And some of the ideas that we heard from them, you know, we were just blown away. So I don't think that not meeting face to face is going to come in the way.
I'm really glad that you think that, because I am on the opposite camp. I am someone who loves to be in an office. I have found myself stifled sitting at home and working. And I'm like, give me interaction with people and I'll probably get back the bounce that I had. However, I looked at Ben & Jerry's, and 2020 was Ben & Jerry's best year. They released 40 new flavors mid-pandemic. So I'm hoping that I'll find some of the tricks from them and I'll be like, okay, I'm going to release my own Ben & Jerry's flavor and get back to my innovative self. I'm going to ask you one last question in this topic, and then we'll check whether we can squeeze in a third. But I was looking at a region-wise breakup, and that's what I love about this report, because they've not only given us overall global data and interpretations, but they've also broken it down by region. And this was super interesting. So workers in Asia say they feel more connected with co-workers, they are less exhausted and stressed, and more free to be their authentic self. Yet, they are also more likely to change professional paths, which is a 47% versus a global average of 41%. And 56% are likely to change their career versus a global average of 46%. Now, Raj, do you have a hypothesis why this might be?
You know, interesting you say this, Ankita. I was frankly not aware of this until I read through the Work Lab report. However, it'll be a cliche for me to say that it is due to the culture in this part of the world. You know, that's a cliche though. And in my previous role, I used to lead human resources across Asia Pacific and the Middle East. And I've always seen a lot of similarity in the Asian culture, especially between cultures like China and India, etc. Staying with the report though, Ankita, I liked the bit on authenticity. Mm-hmm. I've always believed authentic leadership is the way to go. And not that, you know, what you learn in textbooks are not good enough, but right. I think authenticity is really important. What I would add to authenticity is kindness and compassion. And as I mentioned before, I'm a big fan of Thich Nhat Hanh, and it is amazing how he simplifies the concept of kindness and compassion. I've always heard the acts of kindness and acts of generosity are traits employees love in managers, and it's possible Asian employees are seeing it more than the others.
That is interesting indeed. Okay. I am going to try and squeeze in a third topic for a very short discussion, but it's something that has been on my mind for a bit, and I would love to get your thoughts on it. And you know what I'm going to talk about. So for a third and final story, Forbes is launching a US 50 over 50, a category like I've never seen before. So I've heard a lot of 30 under 30, 40 under 40, but this is the first time I've heard the word over being used. And I thought it was super fascinating because ageism is a topic which is starting to get some traction. And I'm hoping that this entire thing brings it more attention. But Raj, two questions for you. One, is ageism something that organizations should pay attention to and how? And second, do you think women face ageism over a certain age more than men?
You know, interesting that the Forbes launch is in the US, and it actually says women 50 over 50. And that's a very interesting one. I think in the context of work, I still think women have not really gotten the level playing field. It took so long for a country like India to get women directors on board. I'm talking about independent women directors on board of a company. It had to take almost like a legislation to get it. And even after we got the legislation, there were still companies that were paying a fine rather than going and getting a woman director on board. So I think there is still a long-standing, I think, bias, which is probably dates back to several centuries, that women still have to overcome. And
absolutely,
I'm a staunch believer that unless you get a good representative workforce that represent your customers, you're going nowhere. That is one part. Okay. Then coming to the ageism question, and again, that is a big bias. You know, especially if you're looking for frontline kind of roles. I'm not talking about senior roles. Senior roles, you're probably looking for someone who has a gray hair. And I got gray when I was 10 years old. So, but the thing is, there is a bias. And often the way you circumvent this bias is to not talk about age. And that is what exactly some really advanced nations are doing. For example, in the US and probably in Europe as well, you know, looking at age as a criterion is absolutely forbidden. But it's still not the case in some parts of Asia. And I think it's a double whammy of sorts, right? You know, you're biased against a certain gender, and you're biased against a certain age. And that's a double whammy of sorts. And, you know, I feel very strongly about it, to an extent that even at workplace, I'm known almost like a feminist. And I think it is very, very important that we get women in leadership positions, not just in frontline positions. You know, it is easy to say I have a 50-50 workforce max, but you need big leaders of women. So you can then start to straighten out or shake up a few of the notions that has been ailing our corporations for a long time. I don't know, this is probably a long answer to a short question of yours. And by the way, what was the second question?
I think you answered both. My first question was just on ageism and how organizations can tackle it. But the second one was, do women face ageism more? And I think you answered it brilliantly. Like, women, irrespective of age, face a bias. And then older women will like naturally face more of it. And it actually got me thinking, like, I've seen resumes with date of birth on it, and I've like, it doesn't make sense. And after a while, you don't even need to put the year you graduated out of college and other age indicating factors, because I think after you've been in the profession for 20 years, no one really cares about when you graduated and hopefully from where.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So with that, Raj, it was great having you here. I'm so glad I could squeeze in a third topic. We had a super interesting discussion on Basecamp, the Work Index report, and ageism. Raj, any closing words?
It's a pleasure. It was an absolute pleasure being with you on this podcast. I wish you well, Ankita. And these are really good topics. And I love to listen to it when it's released and probably have it propagated among several other of my colleagues.
Absolutely, Raj. With that, on behalf of Raj, myself, and everyone at NHRDN, we are out.
You're tuned in to the HR Bandit podcast, your one-way ticket to the latest and craziest in the world of work. in partnership with Timber Media, Podcaster for India Inc. is sponsored by Adrenaline E-Systems Limited.